Our subject today is the opening verses of the 27th chapter of the book of Genesis. And we will now read these verses. And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, so that he could not see, he called Esau his eldest son and said unto him, My son. And he said unto him, Behold, here am I. And he said, Behold, now I am old, and I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver and thy bow, and go out to the field, and take me some venison, and make me savory meat, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt for venison, and to bring it. And Rebekah spake unto Jacob her son, saying, Behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau thy brother, saying, Bring me venison, and make me savory meat, that I may eat and bless thee before the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. Go now to the flock, and fetch me from thence 2 good kids of the goats, and I will make them savory meat for thy father, such as he loveth. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, that he may eat, and that he may bless thee before his death. And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, Behold, Esau my brother is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. My father peradventure will feel me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me, and not a blessing. And his mother said unto him, Upon me be thy curse, my son, only obey my voice, and go fetch me them. And he went and fetched, and brought them to his mother. And his mother made savory meat, such as his father loved. And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her youngest son. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands, and upon the smooth of his neck. And she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And he came unto his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac said unto his son, How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son? And he said, Because the Lord thy God brought it to me. And Isaac said unto Jacob, Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not. And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father, and he felt him, and said, The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, as his brother Esau's hands, so he blessed him. And he said, Art thou my very son Esau? And he said, I am. And he said, Bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee. And he brought it near to him, and he did eat. And he brought him wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said unto him, Come near now, and kiss me, my son. And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment, and blessed him, and said, See, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which the Lord hath blessed. Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven, and the fatness of the earth, and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee. Be lord over thy brethren, and let thy father's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out for the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. And he also had made savory meat, and brought it unto his father, and said unto his father, Let my father arise, and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac his father said unto him, Who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, thy firstborn Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, Who? Where is he that hath taken venison and brought it me, and I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him? Yea, and he shall be blessed. And when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry, and said unto his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, Thy brother came with subtlety, and hath taken away thy blessing. And he said, Is not he rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing. And he said, Hast thou not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said unto Esau, Behold, I have made him thy lord, and all his brethren have I given to him for servants, and with corn and wine have I sustained him. And what shall I do now unto thee, my son? And Esau said unto his father, Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth, and of the dew of heaven from above, and by thy sword shalt thou live, and shalt serve thy brother, and it shall come to pass when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob, because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, The days of mourning for my father are at hand, then will I slay my brother Jacob. We saw in our last study in the life of Isaac that we decided to divide the life of Isaac into three distinct sections. We saw in Genesis chapter 5 that it was Isaac, the family, that was the point at issue. Then, when we turned our attention to chapter 26, we saw that it was Isaac, the famine, that was the point at issue. And now, when we turn our attention to Genesis chapter 27, we now see that it is Isaac, the firstborn, which is the point at issue. With the completion of Genesis chapter 7, we will leave the story of Isaac behind and commence our consideration of the story of his son Jacob. But in the 27th chapter of Genesis, we are concerned about the firstborn and about the time when Jacob took the blessing that Isaac intended to give to Esau. It has long been considered that in Genesis chapter 7, we are dealing with the actions of a young, impetuous kind of individual. But let us look, in order to ascertain the age of Jacob at this time. We can discern this by a number of facts. If we go further on in the book, we find in the 41st chapter that Joseph was introduced to Pharaoh when he was 30 years of age. Now you might wonder why we are going so far on as that, but let us take that as the first benchmark in our consideration of the age of Jacob. In Genesis 41, when Joseph was introduced to Pharaoh, he was 30 years of age. Now, Jacob went down to Egypt when Joseph was 39 years of age. That is, after 7 full years and 2 lean years. So we now have it that 9 years later, Jacob went down to Egypt, and thus at that stage, Joseph was 39 years of age. Now at that stage, Jacob was 130. We get that from Genesis 47 verse 9. So let us sum up that if Jacob was 130 years of age when he went down to Egypt, and Joseph was 39 years of age at that stage, well, Jacob was 91 when Joseph was born. Now, Joseph was born in the 14th year of Jacob's time with Laban, We get that in Genesis chapter 30, verse 25, for instance. So, let's add this back. Joseph was born 14 years after the incident in Genesis chapter 27. And at that time, when Joseph was born, Jacob was 91. Therefore, when the events of Genesis chapter 27 took place, Jacob was 77 years of age. So, these are not the actions of a young, immature, impetuous individual. They are the actions of an individual who was 77 years of age. Now, let us, first of all, consider how we intend to look at this chapter. I want to look at the four individuals who make up the story: Isaac, Esau, Jacob, and Rebekah. And we will see in this sad incident that they all made mistakes. We will look firstly at Isaac. I want you to notice, please, about Isaac, that his appetite was wrong. Here we have a man of considerable years who seems to feel that the day of his death will soon be. Indeed, he says in verse 2, "Behold, now I am old, I know not the day of my death." As a matter of fact, many years were to pass before Isaac did die. But if you look closely, you will see that Isaac was 137 years of age when this incident took place. I leave you to work out how that is. He died when he was 180, therefore he had 43 years still to live. But we ask the question, why did his mind turn to his death when he was 137 years of age? I suspect the reason for this is that Ishmael, his brother, died when he was 137 years of age. So here we now have Isaac, who has come to the age when his brother had died. And no doubt because of this, his thought turns to his own mortality, and he seems to consider that his life is almost over. "I am old. I know not the day of my death." He is saying, "I can go at any time." Now, we have said that his appetite was wrong, and let us consider how this is revealed to us. Esau was a hunter, and we have already seen that Esau took the character in measure from Nimrod the hunter, the first great hunter of the Bible. It would appear from Genesis chapter 27 that Isaac encouraged Esau in this unprofitable lifestyle. It is sad when a father encourages a son in a lifestyle that is not profitable. To the men of the world, being a hunter was a thing to be admired. To be a hunter marked him out as being someone of strength, no doubt of courage and of ability. And, as we have said, the men of the world would look on in admiration at such a man. But Isaac surely should have known better. He should have been aware of the other issues involved in this. And here we have him encouraging Esau in an unprofitable lifestyle. Let us ensure, if we have a family, that we encourage them to go on in the things of God and not to put all their effort into attaining the goals that the world considers to be admirable. Education is necessary. Employment is necessary. But Let us ensure that we encourage our families to go on pursuing goals that are pleasing to the Lord Jesus. Isaac's appetite was wrong, and it revealed itself firstly in this promotion of an unprofitable lifestyle. Now I want you to notice secondly, please, that Isaac found satisfaction from the wrong source. Sad, isn't it, to see that he has a love for savoury meat, hunted meat, wild game. Sad to see that as he is about to perform the last act of a patriarchal priest, as the one head of the family, that he calls for what is essential to enable him to do so. I want you to observe, please, that when we find our appetite from the wrong things, we will encourage others to go in for the wrong things. And so this man, who will seek to carry out a patriarchal priestly act, does so in the strength of the satisfaction of sensual appetite. And such a man will encourage his son to pursue sensual goals. Isaac, you're making a dreadful mistake. As a man of your age and experience with your background, you should know better than this. So, he encouraged Esau in an unprofitable lifestyle, and he found satisfaction from the wrong source. But you must observe also that he was blinded by natural affection. It was because of natural affection that he did not see beyond the exterior character of Esau, down into what was in his heart. He would have blessed Esau and given him the birthright and the blessing. The blessing bestowed the father's favor on the son and bestowed on him the lordship of the family. Yes, Isaac would have given this to a man such as Esau, even although in the previous chapter we saw that Esau, by his marriage, was a grief both to Isaac and to Rebekah. So this son, who was a grief to him, was to receive the patriarchal blessing. Sad to see that he was blinded by natural affection. So, because Esau satisfied his sensual desires, Isaac sought to bestow on him this great blessing. Yes, it is true to say that the appetite of Isaac was wrong, and because of this, he encouraged Esau in an unprofitable lifestyle. He found satisfaction from the wrong source, and he was blinded by natural affection. But let us turn our attention now to Esau. If the appetite of Isaac was wrong, the ambitions of Esau were wrong. And let us consider just for a moment how this revealed itself. I want you, first of all, to notice what we have already noted, but must still consider, that his marriage reflected this. He was married, as we have already seen in the previous chapter, to Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. He had married, and in terms of New Testament teaching, he had married into the world. So, we see right away where his ambitions lie. Indeed, we see right away where his affections lie. They lie in the world. And so, early in life, Esau declared where his affections lay. I want you to notice, please, that we see that his ambitions were wrong because he placed no value on spiritual things. We have seen previously how little he valued the birthright, so much so that he was prepared to sell it to Jacob for a little food. We saw that his consideration was that there was little value in something that would be his tomorrow if he was hungry today. He was really saying, let us eat and drink. Let us go in for what we can enjoy today and ignore completely the spiritual values that which will come to their fruition in a coming day. What a sad individual he was. So he placed no value on spiritual things. If I am speaking to those who are young, I want to tell you to place a value on spiritual things right from the beginning of life. Do not reject them or ignore them, and give favor to the values and ambitions of this world. How do we know whether someone places a value on spiritual things? We do not know by what they say, because talk is cheap and we can say it. Indeed, we can profess anything. But we know by how they live. How often do you go to the gatherings of the assembly? Are you always there? At midweek meetings, would you rather be at your work or at the gatherings? Is it really necessary to absent yourself? Sometimes, such is not possible to avoid. But really ask ourselves the question, what do we value more? And early on, it is possible for others to detect where your affections and your ambitions truly lie. In the case of Esau, there was no doubt at all that his affections and ambitions lay in the world. His marriage reflected this, and his conduct, apart from his marriage, reflected this also. I want you to see, please, that there were other consequences of this. If we were to turn over to the 36th chapter of the book of Genesis, we would find that his family reflected this. If you look there, you will see that the generations of Esau are given, and they are called Duke Korah, Duke Gitom, etc., Dukes, and there is obviously a worldly aristocracy there. So it is that the family of Esau sought worldly place. They sought worldly position. They sought worldly influence. And they sought worldly wealth. His ambitions were wrong. His marriage reflected this. His conduct reflected this. His family reflected this. Let us pause and remember that it is not possible to live with worldly ambition while your family are growing up, and then when they get into their teens, start to think that they should have an interest in spiritual things which you yourself have never manifested. God in His grace may bring that about. But I tell you, it is a solemn thing to bring up children and to have in the home the atmosphere, the environment, the conversation, and the amusements of the world. So it is here that the family of Esau reflected his own ambitions. When we turn to the Epistle to the Hebrews, we read a New Testament comment on the character of this man called Esau. It is in the 12th chapter of that epistle and the 16th verse that we read that Esau was a profane man. Now what does it mean when it says that Esau was a profane man? If you look carefully, you will see quite simply that it means that he was an unholy man. The verse reads, lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. He gave up the riches of the future for the morsel of today. An unholy man, a man without interest in spiritual things, a man not to be followed. So we have seen that Isaac, his appetite was wrong, and Esau, his ambitions were wrong. Now let us turn our attention to Jacob, and I would submit for your consideration that his actions were wrong. Isn't it strange that this man really did value the birthright? And it is clear that he understood what was involved in this. Already, he had made the bargain with Esau, whereby he bought the birthright. But now he wished the patriarchal blessing. And he did value it. But in order to achieve it, he deceived. I want you to see, please, that in the language of the New Testament, he had spiritual ambitions, but he sought to achieve them by carnal means. In other words, he did know the value of spiritual blessing. He understood the value of what God would bestow, but he sought to achieve this by the wrong means. Now, it is possible for a believer to act like that today. An individual can understand the value of the great blessings that God bestows on believers, and the great blessings that come from walking with God. There can be a measure of understanding, but there can be an attempt to achieve that the wrong way by carnal means. Maybe that we think it can be achieved by becoming a leader amongst God's people and achieving that by the wrong means. It may be that we understand that that can come through a knowledge of the Word of God, but seeking to achieve that, not by the diligent study of the Scriptures, but by the wrong means. And so it is. We will learn now a very important lesson. That spiritual objectives can only be obtained by spiritual means. If we have a hankering after some of the great blessings that we read of in the Bible, we must only pursue them by spiritual means. We must not pursue them by carnal means. And Jacob sought this. So I want you to notice that very carefully. He valued the birthright, but he deceived to achieve this. He went into the presence of his father, and his deception is seen very clearly when, in answer to his father's question, "Who art thou, my son?" he said, "I am Esau, thy firstborn." So, the lie was told. The deception was carried out. And strange enough, it would appear at the very beginning that he had achieved his purpose. I want you to notice, however, if he valued the birthright, and if he deceived to achieve this, we must also observe that he paid the price of his deception. Because he had to leave home, and we will consider more of this in our next study, but he had to leave home, leave his mother and his father behind, travel to a far country, and for many years be the servant of an unjust master. And so, by using carnal means, it appears that he has immediate success, but he has to pay the price. Can we learn the same lesson? That we can pursue an objective using means that are not spiritual. But we will pay the price. There will always be a cost. And we will never be able to walk away knowing that our deception has been successful, and that we are clear of the matter. Jacob will have many years to consider what took place that day in his father's tent. Many years to consider the issues involved in the words, "I am Esau, thy firstborn." So the actions of Jacob were wrong. I want you to turn your attention to Rebekah. And I want you to notice, please, that her approach to the whole problem was wrong. So, Isaac, his appetite was wrong. Esau, his ambitions were wrong. Jacob, his actions were wrong. And Rebekah, her approach was wrong. I want you to observe firstly, please, that her approach was wrong because she took the lead. In such a matter, she should never have taken the lead. Right through the book of Genesis, the lesson has to be learned. Eve took the lead when she should not, and the result was disaster. Sarah took the lead in encouraging Abraham to take Hagar, and the result was disaster. Here we have Rebekah taking the lead in her desire to see Esau excluded and her favorite son Jacob given the blessing. The result was that Jacob had to leave home, and after that parting, she never saw him again. For her, the result was disaster. I want you to notice a second lesson, please. That what started with deceit, she had to continue with deceit. It was she who encouraged Jacob, who cooked the meal, who gave him the food, who gave him the clothes, who indeed set up the whole thing, and she commenced it with deceit. But when she learned the hatred that Esau now felt for Jacob, after Esau discovered what had taken place, that she had to go to Isaac and say, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me?" In other words, she had to go to her husband and say, "I want Jacob to go away to Laban to get a wife. I don't want him to be like Esau and take a wife of the daughters of the land." Now, that really was deception. That was not the reason why she sought Jacob's departure. So, what commenced with deception had to continue with deception. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. And let us learn the lesson that when we commence a pathway of deception, in order to pursue that pathway, more deception, and more deception is necessary. Poor Rebekah has a sad lesson to learn. And so, we saw that she took the lead. We saw that what started with deceit, she had to continue with deceit. But I want you to see that she recognized the depth of the problem. She realized the mess that had been created. And she understood exactly the hatred of Esau for his brother, Jacob. Deception can only bring, not only as we have seen, further deception, but can only bring further despair and further heartbreak. Nothing good can come of it. And Rebekah learns too late that her whole approach to the problem was wrong. So, they all made mistakes. The appetite of Isaac, the ambitions of Esau, the actions of Jacob, the approach of Rebekah. I want you, however, to see a mistake that they all made, one that was common to all four. Did you observe in this what is missing from the chapter? What is significant by its absence? What is missing is just this, that not one of them asked of the Lord. Isaac does not ask of the Lord as to whether Esau should be blessed. Indeed, I take it to be, he should really have known better. He should have known that Esau could not have received the blessing because of his character. He did not ask of the Lord. Esau, well, we would hardly have expected him to ask of the Lord. But Jacob, he did not ask of the Lord. And Rebekah, no entreaty to the Lord from her. And yet this was a woman and her husband who, faced with a crisis regarding her barrenness in the past, had shown that they could handle such a situation correctly, and they had entreated of the Lord then, both for a child and after the child had been conceived and was in the womb of Rebekah. So, things had changed. Now, there is no asking of the Lord. I want you to notice, please, a mistake that both the parents made. There was no attempt at unity in the home. It was a home divided by the spirit of favoritism. Isaac favored Esau, and clearly Rebekah favored Jacob. So here we have a divided home, and both sons would know where the affections of their parents lay. The affections of one lay with Jacob and the other with Esau, and that in itself would simply drive the wedge deeper between the two brothers and lead ultimately to the tragedy of Genesis chapter 27. It is a mistake, a dreadful mistake, to show favoritism in a home. It is a mistake, a dreadful mistake, to show that a father would favor one brother and almost ignore the other, and vice versa with the mother. So they both made the mistake of showing favoritism. Now, what was the outcome of all this? You may say, well, the outcome was, of course, that Jacob received the blessing, and truly that was God's original purpose. Now, that is true. But listen, by taking things into their own hand and seeking to force the pace, they denied us something that otherwise we would have known, but we do not know now. They denied us the opportunity of learning how God would work in this situation. How would God have prevented Esau receiving the blessing? Now, I think there is a solemn but very important lesson for us all in that. When faced with difficulties in life, do we want to see the hand of God? Do we want to see God at work? Do we want to see and understand how the Lord guides and leads and blesses? So, when we are faced with difficulties, we have two options. We can go into the presence of God and by faith lay the issues before Him and trust Him for a resolving of the situation according to His will. Or we can pursue another course. We can, Jacob-like, take the issue into our own hands and seek to resolve it by our own strength, according to our own lights, without bringing the matter before God. If we do that, we will deny ourselves the inestimable privilege of seeing God at work in our life. Difficulties in life have many different causes, and there may be many different reasons for them. But when faced with them, we can by letting God work. See how he can resolve the difficulty. I do not say by that when faced with a difficulty, we sit immobile and do nothing. Obviously, before God, there are difficulties which clearly we can resolve according to his will. But sometimes we are faced with problems that simply are beyond us. We cannot do anything to resolve them. Here is Jacob, for instance, with a brother and a father who is about to bless him. What can he do about that? He can go into the presence of God, or he can deceive his father. And he and his mother chose the latter. Let us make sure, when faced with the difficulties, the problems, the vicissitudes, and the trials of life, that we bring them into the presence of God. And then we will see God at work, and we will never forget how God, the great God of a universe, heard our prayer and listened to us. But that was denied that. I want you to see, please, that the outcome was not only that they denied themselves and us the opportunity of learning how God would work, but I want you to see, please, that they gave Esau a blessing which otherwise he would never have received. Because at the end of the day, Isaac does give him a blessing. Esau's reaction was one of horror when he learned what had taken place. And there were tears, of course, in his eyes, and he cried to his father for a blessing. It is interesting to note that the epistle to the Hebrews has also something to tell us about that. We read of it also in the 12th chapter of the book, when it is said of Esau that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected, he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. Now look carefully at this. When did Esau shed tears? He did not shed tears when he sold his birthright. He shed tears when the day of blessing was today. He had no value of spiritual blessing that one day he would inherit. But when the day of inheritance came, he shed tears because the blessing was not his. He had no faith to look ahead. I tell you, many will weep when the future is suddenly today. Those who rejected the gospel because it always seemed just to be tomorrow will one day find that tomorrow is today. But what about believers? There are believers who may not pursue the things of God as they ought, not serve him and work for him as they ought, because that's all for tomorrow. But keep in mind that although the judgment seat of Christ may be tomorrow, there will dawn a day when that judgment seat will be today. And I do not say that we will shed tears on that occasion, for reward that should have been ours but went to someone else, but we will certainly suffer loss. Let us, as believers, always live in the view of the fact that the promises for tomorrow will sooner than we think be the promises that are fulfilled today. The rewards that have to be given tomorrow will suddenly, sooner than we think, be the rewards that have to be given today. And how will we be on that day?